Residents of Puerto Rico marked 200 days since Hurricane Maria over the weekend. Months after the storm, life for many people is still difficult, and it's also violent. In the first 11 days of 2018, 32 people were killed in Puerto Rico, double the number of murders from the same time period the previous year. Now, that homicide count has risen to nearly 200 to this date. It's a pace of around 2 murders per day on average for an island about the size of Connecticut. And while many people are pointing to the storm as the reason for the violence, Nick Brown, who's Puerto Rico correspondent for Reuters and former San Juan bureau chief, says the homicide rate points to a crime problem that predates the storm.
There is a bit of a spike there, but not as big a one as you would think. So about 200 so far this year and about 180 to this date in the last couple of years. To the extent that there is a bit of a spike, a lot of it is attributable to a kind of police strike that we saw early in the year in which police officers who were upset that they weren't getting paid OT, staged a kind of a walkout where they called in sick in the thousands. And the murder rate spiked quite a bit during that time. That has settled down a bit, and it's over now. But the thing to realize, storm or no storm, the murder rate in Puerto Rico is quite a bit higher than I think a lot of folks realize, and higher than all but a few major U.S. cities.
Well, homicides and violent crime are down in most parts of the mainland, a long trend, decades long, of less violent crime in America. What's behind the higher rate in Puerto Rico, though?
Well, for one thing, it is a very poor island, and its infrastructure is pretty bad there, and that's going to lead to people looking, you know, outside the system to survive and to make money. It's going to lead to a culture of drug trafficking. It's also geographic, though. Drug trafficking has been an enormous problem in Puerto Rico for a long time because Puerto Rico is kind of the ideal avenue for drug traffickers trying to get product into the mainland. Once, you know, drugs come into Puerto Rico, they don't have to go through customs once they get to the mainland because Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. So despite all this talk of Mexico and building the wall, you know, cocaine trafficking through Puerto Rico has actually quintupled in the last decade or so. And a piece of that may be because of increased supply. A piece of it may be because the crackdown on the U.S.-Mexico border is actually pushing traffickers to find new avenues. I think, you know, law enforcement agents are still trying to get a handle on that and still looking into it. But whatever the cause may turn out to be, the fact is that cocaine trafficking through Puerto Rico is on the rise and violence along with it.
How does this impact daily life for people in Puerto Rico? You spend a lot of time in San Juan and on the streets there and in other cities and towns across the island as well. Does it feel like an island under siege or not so much?
Lately, although there's been a sense of normalcy start to return, and that's true, you can drive in Puerto Rico now and kind of fool yourself into thinking things are normal. Aesthetically, it looks a lot like it did before the storm now, and the restaurants are open, and most of the police are back. And a lot of people that you speak to may say it's starting to feel normal again. But for others, and I think this is especially true of those who left the island, they're simply not ready to trust that. Even if data suggests that things are getting back to normal and that crime is perhaps being more contained again, they're not ready to trust that. This was a traumatic event. You know, make no mistake, this was a trauma. So for people who left the island, their most recent memories of the island are of this suddenly dark and unsafe place. And that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, for the local government there is in drawing people back to the island, is how do you overcome that fundamental psychological sense of insecurity?
Nick Brown, Puerto Rico correspondent for Reuters. Nick, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Let's stay in Puerto Rico now, where since May of 2017, the island has lost nearly 39,000 students. That's according to Puerto Rico's Department of Education. And half of the island schools are at 60% capacity. Now, those numbers, according to officials, are driving a major cut in the island's education system. Late last week, Puerto Rico's Education Department announced that 283 public schools will close this summer. That's about one quarter of the island's 1,100 public schools. But there are other changes happening in the school system, driven, it seems, not by migration, but by ideology. So says Rima Brucey, a writer and education advocate from Puerto Rico who teaches at Lehman College in New York. Rima, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So schools closing, Rima, before and after the hurricane. The Secretary of Education, Julia Kelleher, is pushing reforms through the legislature in Puerto Rico. What's the broader picture of what's happening to the island's education system right now?
Yes, the broader picture is important because it suggests that the logic of school closings goes way beyond migration or a reduction of the student population. Basically, she's announced these closures, but she has also pushed this bill that was recently signed into law. It's called the Educational Reform Bill. And this bill is explicitly described as a school choice bill. And the two main pieces of this bill are school vouchers and charter schools, right? This is the first time Puerto Rico is going to have charter school in its history, and the first time it's going to have school vouchers in its history. So evidently, there's an expectation that students are going to be moving from public school to private school, right? So then the logic of school closings has to go beyond migration.
Now, you're talking about two very controversial aspects of education reform. Charter schools, less so. Vouchers, certainly extremely controversial. People might ask, why is now the time when Puerto Rico's in crisis to implement such divisive reforms?
Yes, and charter schools are also very vaguely defined in the bill. In the absence of clear explanations from the Secretary of Education as to why charters and why vouchers and why now, people can't help but speculate about the possibility of very powerful interests driving both school closures and the contents of this bill. A closed school, for example, was already rented to a powerful evangelical church to open a private Christian school, and the rent is $1 a month. Some of the schools that are going to be closing are near the beach in areas that are being heavily gentrified because a lot of Americans from the mainland are moving to Puerto Rico to take advantage of tax exemptions. And they are moving especially into these areas that are close to the beach, and they are buying a lot of property there.
But if reformers are pushing bills through the legislature, Rima, how was the public education system doing before?
Well, the public education system had performance issues. A lot of the schools were technically low performing according to federal law, right? Partly probably because the teacher salaries in Puerto Rico are so low and because of underfunding and because of very high poverty levels. 80% of the students in the public school system live under the poverty level. So there's this pattern, right, of moving services from the public sector to the private sector in Puerto Rico, and the education, what's happening in education is part of that larger pattern. So it's not really a response to migration, I don't think.
Well, you mentioned more religion-based schools, privatization of some schools, charters and vouchers. Betsy DeVos at the Department of Education, I think, would like what she sees if she looked at Puerto Rico. Has she said anything?
Well, this bill, this educational reform bill was created, written in close collaboration with DeVos's Department of Education. And yes, I'm sure that she and her group of collaborators, they love what's going on in Puerto Rico because it is pretty much the same agenda that they're trying to push at the federal level, but with much less friction because Puerto Rico is right now under the control of a fiscal control board established by Congress, which pretty much has absolute powers over Puerto Rican financial decisions, right? Because we're under the control of the board, Puerto Ricans cannot resist or push back against this reform in the same way they can push back in the states. So this is basically educational reform DeVos style on steroids.
Writer and education advocate Rima Brusi, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.